Hi, welcome to Visual Studio Toolbox. I'm your host, Robert Green, and joining me today is Andrew Hall. Hey, Andrew.
Robert.
Welcome back.
Thank you.
We are going to talk about debugging today.
We are.
And you were going to take us on, show us some tips and tricks for debugging. We're going to see some new features in 2015, some things that have been in there all along.
Absolutely.
Cool.
Yeah, the funny thing about developing software is you spend a lot of time in the debugger.
So yes, we can you probably do.
Always spend time figuring out how to be more productive with our
yep.
tools.
And there's a lot in the debugging tools that's been in not only in this release, but in previous releases as well. So
absolutely.
There should be a lot of stuff that people haven't seen.
Absolutely.
Cool. All right.
Shall we?
Shall we?
All right. So I'm just going to start by starting debugging. We can look at the app that I wrote. This is going to be a WPF app that's ultimately going to
sure looks like it.
To an ASP.NET server. And I wanted to make sure
Battleship
that...
Light.
That's right. I want to make sure that we greeted everybody appropriately, but unfortunately, I seem to have a bug in here. Mm-hmm. It's actually picking up my command line parameter rather than the actual channel 9.
Okay.
So let's go figure out what's wrong with that. So first thing is, notice I actually threw a bunch of code in at the top of my mainwindow.xaml.cs file. So if I want to get into the entry point to my application, one thing that people don't know a lot of times is you, instead of having to find the right place, scroll, or find the editor, you can start debugging using the step functionality. So you can do step into or step over. So the keystroke, so we'll just say step into. And assuming you have just my code enabled, which is the default, you're going to step immediately to the entry point of your application.
Nice.
Quickly, I'm going to point out, and we'll talk about them a little bit later, that in Visual Studio 2015, you see the diagnostic tools window pop up. This is going to have a lot of great information. I think you've already done one show on it.
Yep.
And I'll show a little bit of information available there later. But one tip is, if I'm not interested in this data at the moment, I don't have to close the window. I can simply unpin it, and it's going to go over here.
Okay.
It's going to be nicely over there. If I want to bring it back, it'll go away when it loses focus. And if I want to pin it again, it goes right back to the location that it was before. It's actually a new feature. It looks
right.
kind of like it shares the Solution Explorer location, but actually if I pin Solution Explorer, you see it's going to be next to Solution Explorer. So that's a small little thing that we got in the shell this time, is the ability to actually pin a window in that place or unpin it and have it jump
okay.
over
now,
to the
now, do you see the people using that as more of an advanced thing, or do you think as you're stepping through code and doing your basic debugging that you'd be using that?
It's a little bit more of an advanced thing,
okay.
but we'll talk about some of the utility for solving problems later that even could come into play with some of the basic debugging,
okay.
with some of the historical elements
mm-hmm.
of what that window shows me.
All right.
So if you recall, our particular bug here is we're trying to figure out why we're not showing channel 9, why we're showing the conference parameter. So I'm going to go ahead and just step down here to where I'm building the string that I'm assigning to the greeting.
Mm-hmm.
And if I want to see what all of these particular functions are returning, something that we added in 2013, it was one of our top customer asks, is the ability to, when you step over a function, the debugger has the ability to show you the return values for all of the methods that were called on that particular line. So if I look down here in the autos window, and actually new to 2015 is the locals window will show me this as well.
Mm-hmm.
So either of those windows, in 2013 it was only the autos window that would show me. I can see what each and every function returns. So it tells me that view model, you know, that the greeting returned hello, that the get conference returned show, and that the get punctuation returned an exclamation point.
Okay.
So I can see that it's this get conference function call that's actually returning the wrong parameter.
Right.
So if I want to go back up, another tip that people can find really, really useful when debugging is you can change the execution location of the debugger using a feature that we call set next statement. So I can either do that via right click and I can say set next statement, and this little yellow instruction pointer that shows me the next instruction that's going to execute will jump. It doesn't undo any of the code that's already executed, so that's
okay.
something that's important to note. So, you know, this view model has already been initialized, so it's not null
Would
now.
Would that be difficult to do?
Roll
back?
It would be extremely difficult to do, yes. But
aren't you collecting a lot of that information in the IntelliTrace? Aren't you recording what happens in the state of everything?
IntelliTrace records some events, but it doesn't have the ability to completely roll a program back to
okay.
a previous point in time.
Huh. Interesting.
But this functionality can be really useful for looking at how we're doing it now. You step mm-hmm. over something, what just happened, go execute it again. Or you can force the debugger into execution location. So if you're doing testing with conditional branches, for example, you can force it to jump to somewhere and say, what happens if this conditional branch executes, even if your conditions aren't set in that
right.
way, right? So I can have if false, and I can jump inside of it, and it'll still, the debugger will now be executing inside of the if false. So I showed how to get to that functionality via right-click. The probably easier way to do it is you can simply grab it and drag it down here, and then you can drag it in the gutter as well
right.
and control
and
execution
in 2015,
in that fashion.
You should be able to drag that with your finger, right?
If I had a touchscreen.
If you're dexterous enough.
That's right. I don't have a touchscreen laptop here.
Right.
But, so next thing is I want to get inside this sp.getConference function, since based on the return values, we figured out that's what's returning the wrong thing. And instead of going into the definition and setting a breakpoint, I can right-click on this, and I can choose something we call step into specific. And this shows me a list of all the functions that are called on that particular line. So if I choose the string provider.getConference function and I click this here, what it's going to do is it's going to set a one-time breakpoint on the entry point to the method, and it's going to now execute the application up to the entry point of that method. So when I click this, I've now run to the getConference function. So that's a really useful thing if you have a lot of function calls on a single line of code.
Is that new?
That is not new. That has been in there since at least Visual Studio 2010.
Okay.
One of the
I'm going to be the one that embarrasses myself by asking if things are new that have been in the product 5 or 6 years, so that the viewers watching at home don't have to ask that.
So one of the things about the debugger is we hide a lot of stuff, unfortunately, under the context menu. So you notice I've already shown two things
right.
that you can get to via the context menu. So when in doubt in Visual Studio, if you right click, you may find some really hidden gems. So now I'm inside this getConference function, and we're still trying to figure out why we're picking up the wrong parameter.
Yep.
And so it looks like I'm checking to see if this args equals title parameter, and so that's what I'd expect. I need to pick up the argument. So instead of going down here and setting a breakpoint that I'm going to have to undo in the future, I'm going to right-click again, and I'm going to choose Run to Cursor, which is now going to do the same thing I just did with the step into specific, but I can do this from anywhere to anywhere.
Right.
And so I'm going to, when I choose Run to Cursor, it says it's a one-time breakpoint, and it runs to that particular location, and I don't have to remember to unset the breakpoint later. So the great thing about Run to Cursor is Run to Cursor, I showed that you can start debugging via stepping. You can actually use Run to Cursor to start debugging and get to that location as
right.
well. So notice I've stopped debugging. I'm going to right-click. I'm going to choose Run to Cursor, and Control-F10 will do the same thing if you prefer to use the keyboard. Notice we're not debugging. I'm in design time. I choose Run to Cursor. Application launches, and the debugger now stops at that execution location.
Right. So that that's a good one. You don't have to set a breakpoint and then remember to take it off.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So we're in here. It looks like I think I can see what my bug is, that the arg is x, which so now that's 1, but I really need to pick up the arg of x plus 1 to assign the variable that I want to return to be part of the string. So another feature that's one of our favorite features for people is we call it edit and continue, and it's the ability to edit my code while I'm debugging without the need to stop and recompile. So I'm just going to go ahead and fix this little bug here with edit and continue, and when I step over, I can validate that my conference it now works correctly.
Mm-hmm.
So let's press F5. Let's keep going. And I can see that I've gone ahead and fixed my bug.
Cool.
So it's a little bit of a couple tips and tricks on just getting started and fixing small bugs. So next thing I want to do, the other thing I want to point out quickly about edit and continue is if you look up here, you can see this little asterisk indicating that the file is dirty. So how edit and continue works is it updates your application in memory only. But when you stop debugging, it'll force a recompilation. So we don't actually update the, like we don't recompile it on disk. We simply update it in memory. So when you stop, so you can end up in some situations if you're using a library that's shared between multiple projects, one of them might actually load the unmodified DLL.
Right.
So it's not sort of a end all be all for just fixing code, but it's really good for fixing stuff in memory quickly like I was there to make sure that my fixes are the correct thing.
Right.
So I'm going to go ahead and restart debugging. This is another thing. You don't have to click stop debugging and click start debugging again. We have a little restart thing here. And when I do that, it'll go ahead and it'll recompile for me to make sure my application's in a clean state before we move forward. And I'm up there. So ultimately what this application is going to do, I mentioned it's going to talk to an ASP.NET web service.
Mm-hmm.
But before that, I simply want to test the functionality to make sure that my data gets loaded correctly. And so when I click the load data button, notice the debugger broke. And here's two little tips for you. First of all, you don't have to set breakpoints or run to cursor. You can actually embed breakpoints in your application using debugger.break functionality.
Yep.
So, but the other trick is I've wrapped it inside of this debugger.isAttached functionality. And here's a quick question for you, Robert. Do you know why I did that?
So that when you build the release version, this doesn't happen.
Close. A breakpoint actually will cause the application to crash mm-hmm. if a debugger is not attached. So a breakpoint's a special kind of exception. And so by wrapping it inside the debugger.isAttached, I'll make sure that if I ever run the application outside the context of a debugger, then the application will execute correctly without crashing. Debugger.isAttached can be really, really useful in certain cases. I use it sometimes. I've hit like weird bugs that I can't repro very often, and they just happen. So I'll say, okay, if this condition occurs and debugger is attached, then I'll embed a debugger.break. So as I'm sort of working in the application in other ways, if I get into some weird situation, it'll stop and I can figure out how to investigate it without necessarily needing to use it over and over, or try to repro something over and over that might only repro one out of every 30 times or something. So there's actually a lot of the Windows Store templates change behavior for tracing and stuff. They have in the startup code, they say debugger.isAttached, and they'll turn on tracing and stuff like that as well. So the debugger.isAttached can be a really useful tool for configuring your application when you're trying to debug a problem for tracing information like that. So I mentioned that I was going to test that the data loaded. And when I go down here, I can see that indeed the data did load. And I have all these little magnifying glasses over here off the side of this data tip. And what a magnifying glass indicates to me is that there's a visualizer available in the debugger. I don't just have to drill through it and inspect it with the tooltips or in the watch window. If I click the magnifying glass, it'll pick the visualizer for me. So by default, it picked the text visualizer, which is the default visualizer for a string. Fortunately, we have a couple built-in visualizers for strings as well. We have an XML visualizer, an HTML visualizer, a JSON visualizer. This is a data set up here, so Visual Studio has a data set visualizer available as well. Really useful if you're dealing with data, which a lot of people do. And then the last type of visualizer that the debugger ships by default is if you look down here, main window, mentioned this is a WPF window, and we have a WPF tree visualizer. So if I click that, it'll go ahead and open that. And I don't have to click the down arrow. If I just click the magnifying glass, it'll open for me. And it'll remember, in the case of string visualizers, the string visualizer that I picked last time. So for example, the JSON visualizer, if I choose JSON visualizer, close, the next time I click the magnifying glass here, it will just remember
that
I chose
the JSON visualizer. Is that per session, or is that
It will remember that per instance of per session of Visual Studio.
Okay.
So it'll remember the next time I start debugging, but if I close Visual Studio and start a new Visual Studio session, it won't remember what I chose last time.
Is that a setting that you can set which one you want?
So you just simply choose it from the dropdown like I did here.
Right, but can you change the default?
You cannot change the default.
Okay.
And then really the reason for that is the string visualizer is the only one that universally applies.
Yeah.
Whereas the JSON, HTML, and XML visualizer, not every string is necessarily XML, HTML, or JSON.
Other than asking you to parse the string, I'm not sure what the use case scenario is.
So, for example, if I go down here to my HTML, or if I pick something that's not JSON, so if I go down here to, let's pick the XML, and I try to use the JSON visualizer, it's going to tell me that it's not a formatted JSON, and then I just see the raw string. So that's why we just default to the string visualizer until you opt into something else. So a couple other things that people are not, that are I think are actually some of my really cool features. So notice now here I'm going to process these apps that I've loaded as part of the data provider as part of a list. And let's say I want to inspect some properties about the app while I'm F5ing around my breakpoint in an iterative fashion. So I'm going to go ahead and look at the app. And immediately I notice that the tip isn't actually showing me something useful about the app. It'd be really nice if instead of app info, it showed me something useful about the app. So I can do that. And to do that, I'm going to go ahead and use something called peak definition. This is another tip. It can be really useful if you don't want to completely navigate to, I need to go up to the definition of app info. And if I peak definition, Alt F12 will also do it. it's going to show me the source file for app info inside the context of my current editor session. So I didn't actually have to navigate to something different. And I'm going to add something called a debugger display attribute. And if I control dot, IntelliSense will offer to plug in the correct using statement for me. And debugger display tells the debugger how you want to look at an application. Mm-hmm. And so I can add plain text. So here I'm going to say ID, colon, and then anything inside of curly braces is going to actually evaluate a property or a variable that's a member of that class. So let's just say app ID, and let's do that. So now the purple squiggles here are telling me that this can't be edit and continued. So we'll restart again. It should recompile it for me. Oops, I misspelled app ID, so I didn't have it cased correctly, so let's fix that quickly. Now, when I start debugging, I'll click my button, load data, I'll hit that, and when I run to my breakpoint down here, let's go ahead and close our peak window now that we're done with it. Come down here, and when I hover over app, I can see that it actually shows me the ID of the app. So the debugger display attribute can be a cool way to attribute your code. It can be really useful when you're going to deal with collections of things. So just hovering over it, the debugger, the default view shows me something, you know, useful as opposed to just giving me the type name.
Right.
The other thing the debugger will do in the absence of a debugger display attribute is if there's a toString method in the class, we'll call that. So if you have a nice toString method, the debugger will try to call that as well. So now I want to look at the app as I'm using it, and I want to look at some properties as I'm, you know, running between these breakpoints in this iterative fashion. And so what I'm going to do here is I'm going to pin this to my editor, so it sticks right there as a little watch. So data tips have this little pin icon that appear off to the right side. That's also been there since Visual Studio 2010. And so I can go, I can pin other properties as well. I can build up my own little mini watch window here in the editor as I go, and I can drag it around, I can put it wherever I want. So let's go ahead and just put it over here. And now I'm gonna, as I run between breakpoints, I can watch my properties change.
Yeah.
So that's a nice handy way.
I didn't know that you could pin individual properties in that. That's cool.
Yeah, it also supports comments. So if you, a lot of times as you're debugging, sometimes you wanna take notes, you remember history.
Mm-hmm.
So I might say, you know, two, and I'm gonna say app two with C#. And now as I run to my next breakpoint, I'm gonna see that, you know, app three was also C#, and at some point we'll get something that's not C#. So go ahead and run to our next breakpoint. And now, you know, four was VB, PSQL.
Okay.
So if, you know, and now I have a history of what happened before. So I stop, if I stop debugging, at some point, I'm focused, stuck in the editor. All right, there we go. So if I stop debugging, notice this little pin icon stays there, letting me know that it was there. If I hover over it, the data tip will pop up over here, and it'll show me my value from my last debug session. So if I stop, I'm trying to fix, I thought I knew what the bug was. For some reason, I didn't edit and continue it. And I'm just going, what was that value? If I'd pinned the data tip to the editor, I now can actually go back and see the last values that I had before I stopped debugging.
Very cool.
And if I want the comments to go away, let's go ahead and start debugging again. I can, of course, just collapse the comments down here. If I click on this, it'll collapse them. The other thing about a data tip is you can, these data tips you can pin to the editors, you can float them, and you can put them anywhere you want.
Right.
So if I had two monitors, I could put them over on a different monitor. So now that I have it floating, let's go ahead down here and step into this. But there's a problem that can occur when watching data you know, in a fashion like this. So if I F11, so I'm going to step into this Git languages for display, the app is obviously still valid because it's still in memory. It's in the frame higher up on the call stack, but I can't see any of the properties. So one of the other things that we have in the debugger is if I go back up to my previous breakpoint, we have a feature that we call make object ID. And what make object ID does is going to allow me to inspect the value of a variable, assuming it's valid in memory, even if I can't access it by the variable name. So I'm going to go ahead and just do that down here in the watch window. And so I'm going to go ahead and click on app, and I'm going to say make object ID, and see how it gets this little dollar sign one now? So now I can reference things by dollar sign one, And so the app is going to be valid, so I can go ahead, and if I want to do stuff from in here, I can actually add watches from watch. I don't have to manually type, so I can say add watch. And so now, when I come up here, I have $1, and I have $1.appname. So when I step into, in this particular case, I'm down here now in the Git language for display, and I can still inspect the values on my app, even though it's not actually in the scope of the application, right. So I couldn't reference it by the variable name.
Cool.
That's another useful feature we have in the debugger.
Very nice.
So it can be quite handy, and when I'm done with it, I can right-click on it, and I can say delete object ID, and now it goes away. It's obviously invalid. So we validated that our data is loading correctly, so we're pretty happy with that. So let's go up here, and I can go ahead and close this data tip because I'm done with it. And I've written some tests. I mentioned we're going to be talking back and forth between us and a server. So let's see what happens when I run my tests. And I can see that for some reason one of my tests failed.
Mm-hmm.
So let's go ahead and figure out why it failed. So I know that the first two tests that are executing are web and mobile and they're passing. So I'm not interested in trying to debug what's going on in that particular case. What I really want to do is I want to make sure to stop when the app name is desktop only. So I'm going to go into the function that is this get apps by type. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to set a conditional breakpoint for myself. So conditional breakpoints are a great way to stop only when certain things are true. And we have this new UI that combines all of the conditions and actions, which we'll discuss it a little bit, into a single point of UI. So if I have conditions and I say conditional expression, this is going to be anything I could conceptually type inside of an if statement. So in this particular case, I want to say decoded type, and I'll get IntelliSense. And the nice thing is this is not modal now. So if, for example, I didn't want to do that for me, I wanted to copy and paste, I could also copy and paste from my application. And I want to say it was desktop. So it tells me that it's saved. So I can go ahead and just start debugging now, and everything will work fine. If I'm not interested in keeping this open, I can click close. Before I do that, I'll show the other types of conditions we have. We have a hit count condition.
Yep.
Hit count will stop after the breakpoint's been hit a certain number of times, and I can combine these conditions together if I'm interested. A quick tip, since this is a debugging tips and tricks, in an iterative case like a for loop where I might know the number, a hit count breakpoint will be a little bit faster than the conditional breakpoint for the same thing.
Right.
So if I wanted to stop when x was 5, if I said, you know, hit count was 6, because zero based, would be take a little bit less time than if I said when x equals 5.
Okay.
That's because the debugger has to do a little bit more work to go evaluate the value of x,
right,
as opposed to simply counting the number of times that the breakpoint's hit.
Yep.
So it's not going to make a difference for a small number like 5, but if it was like 10,000,
right,
you might actually save yourself a few seconds waiting, you know, for that, how long the application takes to execute.
Okay.
So we'll go ahead and cancel that. We'll close this. We'll come back. We'll run our tests again. And we're going to hit the breakpoint. We can see that as we expected, it's desktop. So we didn't stop in the case of web or mobile. We did stop when it equals desktop. And so I want to figure out why this applications, I'm not getting any of type desktop. So I can see here that I have a list of these things, and they're of type ID. But that's a lot of data to go grok through to make sure that I have something of type desktop. So it'd be great if I could just run queries against my collection, which fortunately now in Visual Studio 2015, we can do that in any of the debugger windows. So I'm going to go down here just to the immediate window. And so let's say debugger.applications where a dot app type, and let's say, oh, sorry, I want to select. I'm not going to do a where here. Select a dot app type. And then now what I want to do is I want to do a distinct, because I just want to see the individual ones that are in there, because I'm pretty sure that there's some of type desktop in there. And it's going to execute. It's going to evaluate. And so now I'm able to run queries against collections to answer questions.
This is in my top, the moment in my top 10 favorite features of the product.
Oh, absolutely. It's something that we've been getting asked for basically since Lambda expressions were introduced. So thanks to the power of Roslyn
now.
So
much time. Because otherwise, you have to write this in your code and then put a breakpoint and go look at it.
Yeah.
Right?
Absolutely.
Which is
So probably a good time to do a quick plug for User Voice. So people that aren't familiar with User Voice, we have, you can do a quick search for it, Visual Studio User Voice. That'll take you to the site, visualstudio.uservoice.com. And this was our top voted feature for the debugging space in Visual Studio 2015. Mm-hmm. And we really do make an effort to fix our top requests. So Visual Studio 2013, we fixed the top two.
Yep.
Visual Studio 2015, we fixed the top two requests as well. So just because it's there, not a promise we'll do it.
Right.
But if it's a top one, we will make a serious, serious effort to get it done. In the last two releases, we can happily say we've done the top
requests. That's one of the best ways to influence getting a feature into the product, is put it there and let other people vote on it.
Absolutely.
It's very easy for me to come up and say, I wish it did this. And then the first thing you think to yourself is, okay, I wonder if that can be done. Well, that could be doable, but I wonder if anybody other than you wants this.
Exactly.
And if the answer is no, unlikely that it would go in. If you put it on User Voice and hundreds or thousands, I don't know how many it was, vote for it. How many was it? Was it hundreds or thousands?
It was in the thousands.
Thousands.
Yeah, okay. About over 2,000 people had voted for it. So
yeah.
So that's actually a good segue into our next feature, because it was also a top requested feature on User Voice. So now that I've figured out that there are things of type desktop, I think I see my bug here, Robert, and that's that I have a capital D here,
right,
and I have a lowercase d here. And so I can see up here in my app type.equals in the lambda expression that's doing the selection, I didn't ask it to do a case insensitive comparison.
Okay.
So we talked about edit and continue a little bit before. One of the big pain points in edit and continue all along has been you couldn't edit and continue your lambda expressions. So fortunately, in Visual Studio 2015, now as of the RC release, you can edit and continue lambda expressions as well. So instead of, now even though I could evaluate them down there, having to stop, fix it, and then restart, let's just fix it and keep going. So let's do string comparison, dot ordinal ignore case. All right, we've done that. Let's step over it. It applied the edit. And now when I go look at our apps, we can evaluate the results view, and we can see that indeed we did get some things selected. So let's continue debugging. And we can see that now our desktop test is passed as well.
Cool. So you didn't just blame the data.
I didn't just blame the data.
In code.
I actually fixed it in
awesome.
Code. So yeah, edit and continue for lambdas. That was our number two top request.
Nice.
So edit and continue, or lambdas in the watch windows, number one. Edit and continue for lambda expressions was number two.
What's number three?
Edit number three, I don't remember off the top of my head. But one of the other top ones that we're doing, maybe number three, I don't specifically remember, is edit continue for C++ is currently in progress for x64.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
That's been a top ask. So that's highly voted on User Voice. So I wrote a blog post. It's in a really rough form in the RC. But if you go check it out on our blog, http://diagnosticsblog, you can see how you can turn it on. You can try it. You can see that the work's in progress. So.
Okay, cool.
So a couple more things to do. Next thing I want to do is, I mentioned that this is going to be a web server. Just because we're in a dirty state, I'm going to, or actually, let's go ahead. And so now I'm going to actually try to get my apps from the web server.
Okay.
So I'm going to go ahead and click Get Apps. And we're going to wait. We're going to wait. And my application is going to blow up. Something went wrong. So turns out, I forgot to start my web server.
Ah.
My web server is another project here in my thing, but my project archive.wpf is what the only one that's set to launch. It'd be great if I could set both of them to launch at the same time when I start debugging. You can, fortunately, in Visual Studio. So if I go to my solution properties as opposed to project properties, there's this radio button down here that says multiple startup projects.
Okay.
And so I can choose to have multiple projects launched every time I start debugging. So I'm going to go ahead and choose that. And now, when I start debugging, in theory, both of them are running. I can verify this. So I have the debug location toolbar on. This is going to show me all the processes that are attached to. So I can see that both IIS Express and my WPF application are running. So that indicates that they both launched correctly. And now when I click the Get Apps button, as you would indeed expect, once that process spins up, it's going to have to do a little bit of stuff the first time that I hit it. It's going to go ahead and everything worked correctly. So now what I want to do is I want to make sure that I can filter by type. And so I'm going to do mobile, and I'm going to click load. and it's going to go request from the server just a list of mobile apps, and that worked correctly as I would expect. And so let's go ahead and make sure that desktop works as well. We had a problem with desktop a minute ago, so that might be suspicious. And when I click load there, looks like something's not working correctly.
Right.
Let's go ahead and debug this. Probably a good time to mention that for some reason, I decided to, well, not for some reason, but I've decided to do some encryption between the client and the server to make sure that I'm protecting the data that I'm passing. I'm trying to get that up and running. And I went ahead and implemented my own one. That's the one that's for some reason. So, you know, no good reason for that. So I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to come in here. I'm going to go ahead and just take my condition off. I don't have to delete the condition if I'm interested in it. I can simply uncheck this conditions. It's saved if I ever want it back in the future. But it's now a regular breakpoint. So let's go ahead.
Again, by session, not persisted across sessions?
The breakpoint conditions are persisted with my solution.
Ah, okay.
So if I close Visual Studio and I come back, it'll still be in the same state. Okay. I can get that condition back if I had a complex condition that I didn't want to retype for some reason. It's there, but it's not going to be applied.
Mm-hmm.
So let's go ahead and click our load button. And as we come in, we're going to hit the breakpoint as we would expect. And we're going to see the decoded type is DeskTO. We're missing a P for some reason.
Ooh.
So why are we missing a P, Robert? Turns out it's going to be somewhat complicated for us to figure out. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to actually trace this while I'm doing my execution using a feature that we call trace points. And so how a trace point works is a trace point is, I check this actions button down here, and it's going to log the message to the output window, and it's going to show me here, I have one turned on for when I'm doing the encryption. It's going to say changing my byte to mask to what it did. And there's three types of text that I can do. So I can do plain old text, which is changing. Anything inside curly braces, debug display attribute we talked about earlier, is going to evaluate to the value of it. And then anything with a dollar sign in front of it is what's called a pseudo variable. And there's a bunch of stuff that I can do with that. I have it set here to print the function, but you can print address, caller, call stack, process ID, process name, thread ID. And so I have a trace point set on the encryption. And I have a trace point also set down here on the decryption. So I'm going to be able to go to the output window and see what happened. Fortunately, these were already set, so we don't have to run it again. We can see what it was. And when I go to the output window, let me go ahead and just bring this up here so we can read it a little bit better. I can see that I changed 68 to 121. And because I had the dollar sign function, the debugger printed the function. So this trace points are really, really nice when you're trying to solve problems in iterations where you might have to stop and inspect multiple things and you might have to start making notes about what the values were.
Okay.
Just set a trace point, the debugger prints it all for you, you go back and it's like looking at a log. And so I can see P was the last one. So that was the last one here in the changing 112 to 38. And I can see down here that the decoding, for some reason 38 got changed to 37. And that's why it didn't get decrypted correctly.
Okay.
So somewhere across that web protocol, I had a bug. So if I were to go look in a list of ASCII values, it turns out that 38 is an ampersand, which when you're passing things via URL, ampersand is a special character.
Mm-hmm.
And so because it wasn't correctly escaped, it is getting changed to a different character as part of the URL, and so then it's not being decrypted correctly. So let's go ahead and fix this particular issue. And I want to make sure, I have a hypothesis here that what I can actually do is I can just, instead of using ASCII encoding, if I use Base64, this will solve my problem, I don't think. So let's go ahead and test that. So let's go ahead and continue execution here. And let's run it one more time. And when I hit the breakpoint, instead of stopping and making a change, I just want to go into the string encoder and I want to change the encoding format so I can actually edit the values of variable in memory with the debugger to test hypotheses out, much like I can use the setNext statement to force things that can say what happens if the value is this, what happens if the value is that. So I'm going to go ahead and change that. Again, I haven't changed the code, so I'll have to go back and if it works, I'll have to make sure to update the code later. But now when I press start debugging, everything worked correctly.
Okay.
So that's trace points, and that's the ability to edit things in memory to test hypotheses quickly. So two final things that I want to briefly talk about, because we hit on them before, and that was the, you noticed earlier when I started debugging, I had an exception occur. So one of the complaints we had gotten before in Visual Studio was that our exception settings window was really slow. It was a modal dialogue. You chose it. It would take about 6 seconds to come up, and then you'd have to configure it. You close it. If you decided you wanted to change some settings, you'd have to open it. It'd take another couple seconds to come up. So now in Visual Studio 2015, we have this exception settings window that's super, super fast. I had accidentally docked it up there. Normally, it would open down here. Mm-hmm. And this allows me to ask the debugger to break whenever an exception is thrown. So why is that particularly useful? Let's go back to our application here. And so let's say I'm going to call a invalid URL. Okay. And this is an asynchronous method. And so it's going to tell me that an error occurred contacting the server. I remember when I first graduated from college, I had my first job, I was running line of business applications in VB. I had no idea that this capability existed. And so you wrote your code nice and robust so it didn't crash on your users. And they said, hey, something doesn't work when I do this. Mm-hmm. So I'd go in, I'd start commenting out try catches, I'd run it out of the debugger, and then the debugger would stop at the right place, and I could see what was wrong, I could fix the bug. But with the exception settings window, I simply need to come down here and check the checkbox for whatever I'm debugging. I'm debugging .NET, so the common language runtime exception. Now when I click my error, instead of there, the debugger is going to stop me where the exception is thrown.
Okay.
So that's a quick trick in the exception information. Now we showed trace points and we showed exceptions using the debugger in the output window. So I promised I would show one more tip, and we'd talk about the diagnostics tool window. So what we're going to talk about in the diagnostics tool window is the diagnostic tools window actually shows me it has all of the events that would have been in the output window as well. Mm-hmm. And so I can see where my exceptions were being thrown up here. If I unfilter my view, I have a longer thing. I could actually even go back up and I could find the trace points that I set. So you see here where I did the changing.
Yeah.
So the diagnostic tool window is the only place that I need to go for the entire history of stuff that happened in my debug session, assuming right. I'm in the enterprise SKU. So all of the output mm-hmm. window events come now as part of the IntelliTrace feature right. as well. And so on the exceptions, you know, I showed asking the debugger to stop. I clicked the button once. It didn't work. So I went and configured the debugger. So let's say I didn't want to do that. For some reason, I wasn't able to repro it again the next time. I can actually, here in the IntelliTrace one, I can simply select the thrown event. I can click Activate Historical Debugging, and the debugger takes me back in time yep. to where the exception originally occurred.
Cool. Very nice.
So I think that may be about all the time we have today.
All right. But. That's awesome. So I think most of what you showed has been in the product for a while. There were a few things that were new in 2015. Is that correct?
That's correct. A lot okay. of what I showed... but probably about half and half, maybe.
Half and half,
way
okay.
to think about that, all yeah. Right. The new breakpoints configuration experience, mm-hmm. the Lambda support, a lot of the ability to edit and continue Lambdas.
Yeah.
We've also added, I didn't show up, but you can edit and continue inside asynchronous code, which is super useful considering I think async is just going to become more and more common as
right.
people are developing. But yeah, a lot of the tips and tricks we showed were core tips that you know have been in the product for a while as
awesome.
Well.
Great stuff. Thanks. Yeah. Hope you found that useful. I hope you saw several things that you either didn't know were in there or kind of knew once but forgot. This will really make debugging better.
Hopefully.
Thanks so much.
All right. Thanks, Robert.
All right. We'll see you next time on Visual Studio Toolbox.